Hey, welcome to our mini podcast today, an abbreviated podcast. I'm your co-host, Kirsten.
And I'm your co-host, Kate. What a big week in crypto. I mean, Let's start with the good. This is last week. Last week, we had Gavin Newsom's office coming out with an executive order all about crypto and regulatory guardrails for blockchain and Web3. And then, of course, you have sort of the cataclysmic fall of UST, which last time I checked is at like in a thousandth of a dollar or something.
Is that right? It went below 30 cents. Wow. Well,
it's crazy.
This has been, just a really big headline week, right? And I just saw even this morning, Sam Bankman-Fried has acquired like up to a 25% ownership stake in Robinhood. I mean, there have been so many crypto headlines. Mm-hmm. And I think this need to kind of maintain confidence in the crypto markets, because when you see the price of Bitcoin, it went down under 30,000, and some of these stable coins, not all of them, but questions of whether they could keep their value pegged at a dollar. It just raises for me the bigger question for women investors on not panic selling. I remember when the market went down in 2020 from COVID pandemic, I had a number of friends call me and say they'd liquidated their stock portfolios, which means they realized that loss. And I say that just to keep it in mind for retail investors to not panic sell, because these are only losses that are unrealized. If you sell your cryptocurrency now and the market's down, you're basically going to have that loss. Whereas with all the volatility, it's likely they're going to continue to go up and down and up and down. So just a shout out to people to not panic sell.
I think the caveat being it totally depends on the project and the coin, because even from my vantage point at Elliptic, there's just a ton of scams and people who are taking advantage of both men and women who are not super digitally literate, who aren't financially literate. I don't know who came up with this term, but it's pig slaughtering.
And pig slaughtering, wow.
It's so, or something like that, and which is just so gross. But it is the combination of a romance scam and a crypto scam. And I think maybe one of the best ways to avoid panic selling is never even investing in anything, stocks, crypto, whatever, equity, that you aren't 100,000% sure that you want to stick out with.
That's true. I mean, I've always thought, and I'm not even a financial advisor, so do not take this, anyone who's listening is financial advice, but don't invest.
Not financial advice, literally just talking.
Losing. I was a creative writing major, right? So don't invest in anything that you don't mind losing everything in. I think that for, any kind of asset, for crypto, if it's too speculative, but there are plenty of crypto stocks that are, or I wouldn't even call them stocks, assets that are, that people know more about. But to your point, you don't want to be pig slaughtered.
Yeah. And then
I can't believe I just used that in a sentence.
I know. Yeah. Scary days. Yeah. And it's you should always be watched. When it comes to money, you have to be your own best advocate, because there are people who will be willing to protect you. But for the most part, whether it's fiat or crypto, there's bad people out there who want to take advantage. And just, make sure that you insulate yourself from being taken advantage of by, consuming as much educational material as possible and being really aware of the true value or the truth behind whatever you're investing in. Make thoughtful decisions. Don't day trade. I don't know. I remember you did an interview a while back, I think on CNBC or something, and you were talking about it takes the average day trader 2 years to realize that they're for the most part just losing money. And I don't know, that's really stuck with me. That is so bad that there's a 2 year period where people just don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, I got that from, it was an SEC investment advisor meeting where they had a whole bunch of kind of behavioral researchers of investors who were talking about, it's 2 years to realize you're losing money as a day trader. But I think it's a bell-shaped curve, right? You've got some people who are day trading, and then a lot of people who are just investing in like index funds, ETFs, or just like classic crypto trades, right? And then you have, to me, the more troubling statistic is that like 60% of women in this inflationary environment are just keeping all their money still in cash, right? And like, yeah, we can be worried about the markets going down or up, but if you keep stuff in cash, like the inflationary numbers, I think, are like over 11% for some consumer goods even this month. So you're basically just burning your investment money up. So it's almost like there has to be some easier path for like women investors in particular to find products they're comfortable with that have been vetted to invest in. And that's where I think, you know, I'm just like really looking forward to seeing progress on like crypto ETFs, because I think that's like an interesting product for like the crypto spot ETF for investors to be able to diversify their, you know, risk without having to monitor the markets every day, where the ETF kind of rebalances that risk for them the same way it does in equities markets. That you're not like day trading. You can just like, I call it like lazy river investing. It's like inflating an inner tube up and like floating on the lazy river, letting the ETF carry you there. But, you know, I'm sure like our friends at Grayscale and elsewhere have like, shout out to them, like a more sophisticated terminology than lazy river investing.
I don't think that that's going to get coined by Grayscale anytime soon, but it's true. I mean, I think I'd have to think back, but I think genuinely the first thing I ever invested in, like way back, was the S&P. And that was because I knew I wanted to invest and I knew I wanted to do something with money, but I don't know. I was like 19. I didn't know a whole lot about anything. And so an ETF was a really awesome move for me. And I've always held that. I mean, my God, have they suffered in the last like couple months, but I think I'm still up.
I'm sure you are. It goes up an average of like 6% a year annualized since like, you know, the past few decades. But you have to have a long enough time horizon, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I try not to check. I don't like to look at my portfolios because I just find it depressing. Especially in the last few weeks, it's just so rough to see everything that's happening and, you know, things are going down 4% or 0.4% or like all of it. It's just kind of like, I don't know, it makes me feel anxious and I know that I don't want to sell. So it's like, why do I really care what it does, week to week or day to day? It's almost better.
It's like healthy to talk about it though, because I think like, especially with other women, I haven't really talked about these topics. Like we as women tend to talk maybe more about, I don't know, like relationship news or like job promotions or I don't know, other stuff. And money is still kind of like a taboo topic in investing to a lot of women. And so, you know, I'm sorry if I'm offending some of our listeners by talking about this, but you know, it's important because like I said, I mean, I'm even getting calls from people now, like, should I sell? I'm not an investor advisor, you know, but it's like, just don't panic sell. There's like some part of our brain, I think, that enters like fight or flight mode when you see the markets and the headlines moving, that it's like the same part of our brain as a monkey that's triggered with seeing fire. We're like, it's triggered and it's easy to just click a button and hit sell. And, you know, the only time to sell probably be like if you know the investment value is approaching zero and they're going bankrupt and it won't go back up. But other than that, like, you know, just selling on emotion is probably not like the best thing to do.
Right. And I think to your earlier point that you shouldn't invest what you can't afford to lose. And I think it's really sad because that's how, you know, if you have a buttload of disposable income, you're in a great position to try things out and see what happens. Most of us don't have a whole lot of money to be like chucking into experiments, which is unfortunate. And there's no real good advice for that. You know, it's just like the way it is. And, you know, it makes sense, of course. But I think my biggest fear or my biggest concern are people who are living paycheck to paycheck, or even if you're not, you know, you're sort of like, you have to be aware of your finances, and them not having, you know, enough money in a savings account or in a bank where it is protected to cover rent for 2 months if, God forbid, you lose your job or, you know, your car breaks down or, you know, all this, the other things that sort of demand our money from week to week.
And 60% of Americans are living like paycheck to paycheck right now. I think it's at an all-time high, you know, with the inflation that's happening. So I mean, that's where it's going to be interesting to see, you know, just from the, you know, blockchain perspective. And there's been so much anti-poverty alleviation messaging, like, will blockchain really become a more streamlined way for people to make payments? Will that actually impact kind of the bottom line of their family budgets? And how soon is that transformation actually going to happen to have a meaningful impact at these times, which are, you know, hard? I mean, I've read that there's a food supply shortage that's going to be happening in the next, you know, couple months with supply chains breaking down, including, you know, impact by the Ukraine conflict, that a lot of the grain supplies are moving through those ports and are going to be blocked off. Some people are talking about $12 bread loaves, which seems like just like it's going to be such a hard strain, right? So in a way, talking about crypto investing seems like a luxury, but it's important, you know, no matter how, you know, where someone is on the savings path, to still be thinking about long-term savings and investment, and to be thinking how they might put a little bit into investing, you know, to build that wealth. But it's certainly like just this week has been a really, really difficult time reading the news to stay calm, I think.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, this is not the first time I've said this on this podcast. I think the really horrible stories get a lot of coverage. And you know, for the record, there are some pretty brutal stories this week. And I don't know, maybe if there was like a better balance of all the wonderful things that are happening in crypto, or even the like sort of positive things, you know, at the very least, to sort of balance the narrative. I don't know, maybe that would do a little bit to kind of mitigate panic or mitigate unrest. But yeah, I mean, it's stressful. I'm stressed about my normal finances. I'm stressed about my crypto finances. It feels so overplayed right now, but we are genuinely in unprecedented times. I'm 23 years old. I've lived through, you know, two big recessions, a global pandemic, I don't know, what else? Swine flu when I was in the sixth grade. And yeah, I think it's really hard to stay calm. And I don't even know if I have a point at the end of this. I think it's just like,
this is our little like micro podcast to just share this. Because I think so many people in the country are going through this. And if you look at the mental health statistics, anxiety and you know, depression are at this all-time high, especially with younger generations who are, I think, absorbing all of this change and geopolitical conflict and, you know, multiple pandemic quarantines. And now, you know, I mean, I read the most recent college graduates, they are facing really high rents right now. That's their big challenge. Of course, the rents, you know, went way down during the pandemic, but they're going like way back up to pre-pandemic levels. So I think you're right. This is, I guess I can just observe, this is a really big adjustment week and expectations and, you know, kind of a reckoning for kind of the next generation of investors. You read so many headlines about people buying into the dips of the markets, and I think that is happening, but you know, I think it's making people feel less confident about like crypto right now, just reading these headlines. But I think long-term, we're still in the first inning. There's still so much room for progress. So this is just like one point in time, and the long-term value of crypto has yet to kind of, you know, I think show itself in the many stories that are likely to come up in the coming weeks of the newest innovations.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, like we're going to look back in 5 or 50 years and be so thankful that we don't live in 2022 anymore. But right now,
that's a really great gratitude. I love it.
Yeah. But on May 13th, it is currently 1:57 PM. In the year 2022, like we're in 2022. Yeah. I mean, crypto people say like, you couldn't pay me $1,000 to go back to high school.
This is how you feel now. Well, I look at it, you know, like, you know, the crypto markets are still kind of in their infancy. And I am, you know, my background is mostly equity markets, right? And the equity markets took several decades to get to where they are now with like, you know, really fast and sophisticated liquidity that people can get in out of their positions. Like the crypto markets still have yet to build out like some of that infrastructure that are in, you know, the equities markets for trading. There've been trading halts, I know, in some of the crypto platforms. So it's just, you know, any new industry encounters its challenges, but you're right, with these geopolitical times now, it's like a super challenging time to be alive. So to anyone, you know, what are you going to do to de-stress this weekend? Go for a walk, go for a run.
No, 100%. And that's sort of been my mantra for the last 2 years, is like, just to be as kind to myself as possible, because I am so prone to being way too intense and hard on myself. And I think any moment that I can just tell myself to like, just be kind to yourself, you know, when you make mistakes, when, you know, things aren't, everything is going against you, it feels like, you know, the very least we can do to take care of ourselves is just to be, to go easy on ourselves and each other, honestly. Just like be as nice as possible all the time to everyone.
Well, this is a great way to cap it off. I know this is a microcast today, so thank you everyone for joining. And we're going to pick it up with another guest next week, but this has been a great kind of time to just sound off on kind of the mood of the moment this week and captured in time, I guess. But I hope everyone gets some time for kindness for yourselves, go on a forest walk, go spend time with friends, read a book, whatever it takes to unwind.
Yeah. All right. Have a good weekend, everyone. Good night.